Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today the Age of Heroes continues with a new adventure, which we're calling Realm of the Muses. And this will focus on individuals who are using the creative arts and their talents to help and inspire other people. And we're starting off with Lonnie Calvert, who's a creative art therapist. Greetings and welcome, Lonnie. How are you today?
Good. It's so great to be here and be able to talk about what I love.
Yes. And you definitely have a passion for it that shines through very brightly. How did your path lead you to the creative art therapies?
Well, my journey to doing music and art therapies is the two that I do. Was unusual. It started when I was about 15 years old, and I ended up being a sole caregiver for my mom over about 3 years. She was dying of cancer, and she raised our family not using any pharmaceuticals or traditional health care, and she didn't want any in spite of the endless pain she was experiencing, so that was a unique experience.
Yes.
And then my next related work experience was singing in the entertainment field in L.A., but I always wanted to use music for therapeutic purposes, and so after several years in the business, I made the decision to leave L.A. on the business and make psychotherapy and self-mastery my main focus. And then after many years, different jobs, and most importantly, working out a lot of negative karma through my studies at Unarius, I secured work through a local college doing music sessions in nursing facilities, block wards, and memory care, normally with a large group, as an extended studies class. And that lasted for 12 years until the funding was cut. And then at that point, I became an independent contractor, and I did both music and art therapy with the same clientele, except that I also expanded to working with one-on-one with patients in their room.
Wow, that is quite a journey. And how long have you been an independent contractor now?
Well, as I said, it was 12 years with the college, and then it's been about 13 years that I've been on my own.
Why did you pick music and art? Because there's also dance therapy, there's drama therapy, there's a lot of different creative art therapies. What made you choose those two? Music from your career that you had before you got into the creative art therapies, but why art?
Well, because you are you, I'm going to give it to you straight.
So, yes, music, I
was raised with my mom encouraging my brother and I to play guitar and sing for ourselves and for company and everything else. And that's what I did in the entertainment field. But as far as the art was concerned, although my mom was like a grammar school teacher and she encouraged us to do art and did it in her classes and stuff, The true answer is because I have done them in past lifetimes, although in a negative fashion, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to use music for therapeutic purposes. I wasn't happy just, you know, being on stage and making money and that kind of thing. So it came about in an unusual way, and I only did one, and I will tell you how that happened. I was doing music therapy at a memory care facility. Well, they had some patients that weren't memory care, but mainly that's what they specialized in. And I was there twice a week doing music. And then the owner, just out of the blue, I mean, and I had never talked about doing art or that I was an artist or anything in that direction. And he goes, well, would you do, I mean, he loved the way that I worked with the patients, the residents there, I should say. And he said, well, would you like to do an art class with them? And I said, sure. And, you know, and I felt like I had enough, especially with memory care, to do that. I found out after the fact that, you know, it's like I had seen it done in many, many facilities over the years, and I definitely didn't want to do the being on paper plate. So So what I did is I chose, I looked and kept my ears open and, you know, lots and lots of experimenting and stuff. But anyway, I found things that I really, really liked, and then I deconstructed them to little small steps that they could accomplish successfully. And then when you put them all together, they came up with really amazing things. I mean, the staff and the owner were constantly just being wowed by what they were able to accomplish given their normal state of, you know, kind of like when I walked in the room, it was like kind of like vegetables sitting on it. It was in a home, and they had a 15-bed capacity, but, you know, basically they kind of just sat on the couch or watched TV and stuff. And so, you know, getting them to participate, first of all, and then getting them excited about it and happy and talking and singing and doing whatever they could do, that's why he loved what I did, and that's why he asked me to do that. But because I wanted to do things that were really special with them, not just, you know, what you would think someone with dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever could accomplish, I really put a lot of time into prep work so that, because, you know, each resident had different problems, mm-hmm. you know, physical as well as mental problems. You know, like some couldn't see, some couldn't touch, some couldn't, you know, hear, whatever it was. So, you know, I kind of tailored it to each of the residents about what things that they could do successfully. So, yeah, it was a lot of prep work. But I loved it, and everybody else did too. But I bet you know, when people ask if I would do more art classes, it's like, no. You know, I put in like six times as much time out of the classroom as I do, you know, actually doing the class. So. But, you know, I loved it for a while. I did it. I did it right up until the pandemic for 10 years with the same facility.
Are you returning now that the pandemic is no longer such a focus as it was not so long ago?
Well, it was a weird thing. It was like right through the pandemic, all through the pandemic. Well, I shouldn't say all through the pandemic because it's still going on. But, you know, the first couple of years, let's put it that way, I didn't do the art therapy for those 2 years. I did the music therapy because they felt that the art therapy was just too contact. I was, you know, constantly touching them and so on and so forth with helping them. So that was too close contact for that. So they just had me do the music. But then it was a special relationship that was really like between the manager and the owner and I, like the perfect storm in a positive sense. He was showing what a facility could be like. I mean, he brought in organic food, and it was a wonderful place to be. You know, he wanted them to feel that it was their home, away from home. And so everything was really comfortable, and I think that's another reason I accomplished so much, because, you know, they were behind me all the way and loved what was going on. So then right at the end of that period, after the first 2 years, it changed hands, and that was so common in the business. And then owner said, you know, keep three things. Keep the manager, keep the guy who works on everything, and keep Lonnie. Huh. And it was like the first thing she did, she let me go. It's like, you haven't even, I only talked to her once, and it's like, you don't even know how I interact with patients or anything. So, anyway, but sometimes it's like people, if they don't know you, it's like, well, I can get this cheaper.
Yes.
You know, you get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for. I have a little bit of background in creative arts therapy, and I also came about it strangely. But at one point in my journey, I was a supervising activity therapist and creative arts therapist at a major health and hospitals corporation hospital in New York City. And I got to learn a lot about the creative art therapies, and I actually helped somebody on their master's thesis. So I was able to absorb a lot more information on it. And one of the things that always amazed me about the creative art therapies is that people communicate a lot without words through the content of the drawings, the shapes and the colors. And as people go through various steps internally, you can see these things play out in their drawings over time. And it's phenomenally profound, and how certain colors rise into prominence and other colors retreat, and what's going on with the figures in the artwork. It was an amazing thing to me, and almost magical. And I really enjoyed doing that for the years that I did that as well.
I think, I read into that a lot, and especially as time goes on. And I think my experience was different because of doing it with Alzheimer's and memory care. And what would happen is, they just finished the project and they would forget that they did it, you know. But the nice thing about that was that, you know, every so often afterwards I could show it to them and remind them that they did it, and they would get the biggest smile. I did that? Wow. That is so nice. You know, so it's like we get the happiness over and over as many times as I wanted to bring up the subject that they just did that. So, you know, for me, it was helping them to do something that they were proud of, that their family was proud of, because they kept getting reinforcement for them, positive reinforcement. Whereas, you know, when they started, you know, they were often, it's like, well, I can't do art. I don't know how to do that. You know, everybody tells me I can't do it. So, you know, first it was getting them just to do it at all, but then to do something successfully and something that they really liked and that, you know, everybody else really liked, because then they would keep getting reinforced on positive reinforcement.
That's very important. You mentioned families, and a big question everyone has, especially during the pandemic, when I know that we lost family because they were in care facilities during the pandemic. What can people do if a loved one has to go into one of these facilities, whether it be for Alzheimer's or physical rehabilitation, where they broke a limb or pulled a muscle, and they're in one of these places? What can one do besides pray and send positive thoughts?
First of all, I would say, you know, pick your facilities with care. And I know that's hard if, you know, you have a particular budget, because it can be very expensive. But the other thing is, and this is would be where I'm unique as far as not having the traditional degree in music therapy, and what they would say, this is how it's done, right? I studied psychotherapy, you know, Unarius, for 4 years, and so I have a different approach to what it means and how I see the residents as well. So let me paint you a little picture. And I think when I give some examples, I think that might tell the story a little bit better than just giving a pat formula. Because okay. It's standing why I haven't burned out, why I think the way I do, and why I get the results I do. And that I attribute totally to Unarius and what I've learned there. I would have burned out a long time ago. I wouldn't have even have been able to go into one of these facilities, because, like, when my mom was dying, because, as I said, we didn't have traditional health care. We never went to hospital. And the first time I took her into, like, when I no longer could care for her because she was on oxygen and everything else, I knew she was going to die in there. And after my buddy and I admitted her to this facility, or the hospital, I knew I wasn't coming back. I said, it looks like walking death in here. It smells like it, and it looks like it. And even though I knew she wanted me to come back, I knew she was going to die there, I could not make myself walk into one of those facilities again. And so to go from that to doing that for my work every single day, you know, I usually deal with about 15 facilities a month on, you know, a different amounts of time. And I love what I do. But that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't had a tremendous amount of growth. So anyway, for those who are unfamiliar with nursing facilities, and you'll, I think a brief description would be helpful to put the experiences all are related in the later on into context, and also to know what to be aware of, you know, when you're looking for a facility. So not only are there temporary patients that are just there until you recover, but also residents will be there until they die in many places. And the latter have all kinds of mental and physical issues that families either can't deal with at home, don't know how, don't want to, whatever. And unless you have money to pay for a private room or, in an upscale facility, most patients suddenly find themselves in a room with 1 to 3 strangers, often little privacy, one or more roommates may be in pain and constantly talking, crying, moaning, yelling, etc., unless they're getting drugs to quiet them. Memory care patients often don't know where they are, only knowing it's not home. So some keep asking or crying, saying they don't. They need to go home. They want to go home. Residents usually have their own TV, which is normally on constantly, and each one can be playing at a station. At the other extreme, there are patients who never talk. They keep their eyes closed all day and night, not move, hunt like vegetables. So when I work with a group, I don't know all of their individual diseases and problems, you know, the confidentiality, etc. My task is to get them out of the state of being vegetative, negative, confused, depressed, whatever it is they are, and encourage them to sing, participate in endorphins working. And in general, I'm very successful with this. So what I see, rather than viewing their disabilities, is I look for and celebrate their abilities. I see a positive spark in each person, and I do my best to fan it into a flame. So where at the beginning of my session, patients are often just slumped over their wheelchairs, by the end, they were talking, interacting, singing, had smiles, we laughed together, etc. And the nurses often told me, with amazement, that so-and-so never talked before, and now they're singing, you know. So attitude, what you know about, as I said, you know, picking your facilities with care, but also how you view your loved one and everybody else in there. What you know about the continuity of life, that's another reason I haven't burned out, is because I know, it's not a belief, I know that life is eternal. And so even though death was going on every day all around me and many of the patients I got close to over the years, you know, they lasted a long time before they died. And, you know, I loved them all. And we got to know each other well. And so, you know, why I didn't break down, you know, like everybody else does, and crying and depression and et cetera, is because I know where they're going. And that takes study of, you know, the fact that we're not just physical beings, that we, you know, this physical third-dimensional body decomposes at death, but the soul, spirit, psychic anatomy, whatever you want to call it, that essence, like energy, which you can't create or destroy, that goes on. So when you know where they're going, it's kind of like when your child goes off to college or something. I mean, you don't weep. Yes, you're going to miss them, but you know that they're not that dead in the traditional sense. You know, they're still living it in a better place. They'll be without the pain that they're suffering that put them in the hospital in the first place, or the nursing care facility, or, you know, the dementia, whatever. So you'll know they'll be in a better place. They'll love where they go. If you read any NDE experiences, you know, Daniel Brinkley or physicians, et cetera, you'll know that, you know, most of them don't want to come back when they've experienced death for however long, you know, 10 minutes, a half hour, an hour, when they've been declared dead, and they come back and they say, you know, I didn't want to come back. It was so beautiful there. I just felt so much love, etc. So that would be another factor, learning about the continuity of life, that there is no death per se, you know, just the physical body. But, and then, again, another thing would be developing your psychic ability. We all have them. You know, it's not like a sixth sense. Or any other muscle. You know, you use or you lose. You know that. You work out all the time. Okay. If you don't use that psychic ability, which everybody has, I'm not special, you know. But if you use it, then...
Mark, before you proceed, you are special and you are very unique. So, you're an awesome individual.
That's only because of, you know, what I've learned. It's like when I make that attunement with the master teachers on the inner planes, you know, my teachers, spiritual teachers, then that's when the magic, quote unquote, happens. When I make that attunement, then my voice, let's talk about the music for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
My voice is like a carrier wave, and they can impinge or superpose their healing frequencies, because, you know, they're like Venus is the plane of healing. So they have very advanced equipment. It's not all mental. You know, they have physical things, too, that they're developing that eventually in the future will be here on Earth. But they can use these devices. You know, time and space is not a problem in the fourth dimension. So they can use both their knowledge and, you know, these different types of equipment that they have. And, you know, as I said, if I make that connection, just like now, I mean, I can think about you, but if I pick up the phone and I call you and we have this connection, then you can say, you can, like, if I have a computer problem, you can talk me through it. Or if I have a medical thing, you know, they have medical consultations on the phone now. So you know, if I make that connection, it's not a physical connection, it's a mental consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
With them, with my higher self, you know, when I raise my frequency, et cetera. I mean, it's a science to it we can get into. But when I do that, then they can use my voice, my thoughts as a carrier wave. And so when a healing happens, or, you know, as I said, this person who hasn't talked since he arrived here at the facility 6 months ago, and now he's laughing and singing in your class, how did that happen? How did you do that? You know, I don't take credit for that. As I said, I don't know what each person's problem is. But, you know, I do know that they will get help. As I said, I see that spark, that flame within them. I see what they can do instead of focusing on what they can't do. And that's sometimes hard for people, because it's like when, especially with memory care, when your parent turns into like a little child, you know, some people just don't, you know, we're not trained. How do you deal with that?
Right.
So being able to, as I said, see what they can do, see that true spark of life, you know, they are not just their physical body. That's what we see with our third-dimensional eyes, but they are so much more than that. That's not the real them. So getting past, you know, what seems is on the surface. And so they feel, you know, even with, and, here, let me give you, well, do you want to ask a question or talk about something else, or else I'll give you an experience, an example?
Yeah, please continue.
Okay. I think it was something where we were talking about death.
Well, you shared already that knowing that death is not a reality. Okay, you got it?
Right, okay. So, yeah. I was facilitating a Unaris class, and it was about Unaris' perspective on death as a long-term student had just passed on, and I asked everyone to write down. I'm telling you this because it kind of leads into a psychic communication.
Okay.
And I asked everyone to, you know, write down where they would like to find themselves after death, you know, kind of like a 5 or 10 year plan, what they would be doing after death. And a student shared what they wrote at the mic, and I said, I'd like to be on Muse, learning how to create music and art that was more uplifting, inspirational, healing, etc. As far as the present, I mentioned how in the art class that I was doing at that time, a higher functioning resident who had always attended every class since I started, and those are, you know, the easy ones to work with at the memory care facility. She just died, and so now most of the patients are participants were memory care patients, and I found myself repeating more and more. And, cause, you know, that was kind of like when I first started there, and they just didn't retain anything. So I said, you know, I just realized this, and I said this in class, that what I had to do was, of course, see my past with them. We haven't covered that, but make that attunement to the master teachers, but also learn to reach their higher selves, verbally trying to communicate with their conscious mind, like psychokinesis. So, you know, and especially, as I said, with memory care, because a lot oftentimes, you know, they're kind of seemingly babbling about something that doesn't make any sense, right? So, you know, how can I communicate with the real person inside? So that was one thing that came out. And then the next day I was doing room visits, which is one-on-one. Since I have a repertoire of over 700 songs, I let them choose what they like. Plus, you know, for other reasons, I list the different genres to get the ball rolling. But this lady said, well, anything is fine. So I thought, well, I'm going to try and tune in. And it was the day before Valentine's Day, so I was mostly tuned in to love songs. But all of a sudden, I just felt very strongly the presence of her husband. Like, he was coming to sing to her. And it was really hard not to hear at that point. And after I was over, I didn't want to say it directly, so I just said, someone who loves you very much was here and coming through very strong, singing it to you through me. And she said, oh, I ended up singing Can't Help Falling in Love. She said, oh, that was my husband. She continued, that was our song.
Aww.
Singing to me on special occasions. And up until that time, I really had never had that experience before because I, you know, hadn't been doing much one-on-one, or else I wasn't consciously aware of it in that way. So it seemed like it connected to, you know, what I was talking about needing to do in that class that I facilitated. Anyway, so that's an example of using psychokinesis, you know, to tune in. So that was easier because she was actually, you know, she didn't have any memory issues, but that was the beginning.
That's very powerful. I have a couple of stories I'll share, and then I'm going to ask you what are some of the unusual cases you handled. I didn't get into it in the normal way. I didn't have the regular credentialing, but I was really good at it. And so places that I worked for weren't afraid to put me on their insurance. And back then, rehabilitation programs were 17% successful, and my rehabilitation programs were in the 80s, like 85%, 84%, 87%, depending on who was doing the study. I could speak the language of rehabilitation, but I didn't use principles from rehabilitation in designing my programs. I used spiritual principles as well, and I always honored, as you do, the individual. You know, they weren't a patient, they weren't a resident, they weren't a case study, they weren't whatever other, you know, word, they were the person. I would treat them on a very personal level as well. Two unusual things I can think of is once I was given somebody who wouldn't talk, and they felt that he couldn't talk beyond saying hello, yes, and his name. So I spent time with him, and they thought that he was a very low intelligence, and, you know, he was at the animal level. I remember them saying in one of the team meetings that I went to, but I didn't believe that because I knew he was a soul, you know, and he was in his body, and it might be true he has certain limitations. But I saw him reading one day a comic book, you know, and I didn't know if he was reading it or looking at the pictures, but he was very fascinated with the comic book. So there was a technique called the role playing. It's still around. Most people know the game Dungeons and Dragons associated with it, but it's a game of make believe and assuming different characters. So he liked the Thing and the Hulk. Those were his favorites. So I wonder what would happen if instead of talking to the individual, he let me talk to the Hulk or the Thing. And he was able to verbalize as the Hulk and the Thing, which were his heroes in these superhero comics. And so eventually he was able to speak as himself and for himself. But it defied all belief because they wouldn't see him functioning on a higher level than what he was showing before, when actually he was capable of a lot more. And the other case comes to mind is I was given somebody and it said that he's very strange. He might be psychotic, and he makes strange noises. So I'm a science fiction fan. So in talking to him and he'd be making these sounds, I recognized the sounds from a Star Wars, which was very recent at the time. It had just come out, and I know I've seen it around a dozen times. So I recognized that he was responding to questions with the sound effects from Star Wars. So I started to ask myself, when were these sounds, when did they appear in Star Wars? And then I saw that certain emotions were being conveyed by these sounds. So he was communicating very eloquently, and eventually he did it in words as well. But initially, his weird sounds were the emotional feel of certain scenes in Star Wars. So those stayed with me since the 80s, when the early 80s when they happened. And it just shows you that you can't always trust what you see and what you hear. And your assumptions about what an individual is communicating might be totally false. And that's always stayed with me throughout my life. Have you had any unusual individuals that you work with?
Oh, yeah. Lots. This was kind of funny. But again, working with my teachers, this woman was normally in my music sessions, and though she didn't sing, she always wanted me to give her a hug. And this particular day was her birthday, and she wasn't in class, and I asked where she was, and the staff said she was sick, and she hurt her shoulder and was in her room. So after the class, I went to her room to sing happy birthday to her, and her family was all there and gathered around her bed, I guess, due to her birthday, but they all looked really depressed, and they said they had been trying to talk to her for a whole hour, but she hadn't opened her eyes, she hadn't moved and responded in any way. So I asked him if I could sing to her, for her birthday. And as soon as she heard me talk, she opened her eyes, and I was about to sing, and she tried to sit up, so they helped her. And I finished the song and then moved in close to tell her that I knew she couldn't hug me because of her hurt shoulder. But, I just wanted her to know it was something that I was missing. Right away, she reached out to wrap her arms around me without a grimace and hugged me, not gingerly, but firmly. And so I returned it, and she smiled. And I turned to go, and she started to try and get out of bed. Her family cried out, "Where are you going?" I didn't stop. I just was chuckling to myself, knowing that, in that brief exchange, she got a lot of healing energies from my teachers on the inner. But I just thought it was so funny because, they were just like, they're all depressed. It's like, she hasn't moved. She hasn't opened her eyes or responded in any way. It's just like she's dead there in the bed.
Oh.
So it was just funny to watch. But, on a serious note, I know what it was, and I take no credit for it. But just to see the difference, the response, I've had lots of experiences like that. Let's see. What's another one? I'll give you a real, one that was a little bit more traumatic for me. And this one was in the art therapy class. It was, Yeah, as I said, that's the only one where I did the art therapy. And I worked, well, I think I mentioned all of the prep work and all the different things I said, but I had a newer woman who'd maybe done, three classes at that point. And I always encouraged her to participate, but from day one, she would attempt to do something, and if the results didn't immediately, you know, seem like they were perfect, she would say, I can't. And they liked, the residents liked me to bring in a sample to show them, like, what they would be doing, you know, so they knew kind of, like, what kind of art form, because it was different every single class. I did different things with them art-wise. So, to see, and so, you know, when she'd say, I can't, I would show her how or help her if needed. And, but this particular day, you know, it's like over and over, no matter how simple the task was, she would say, I can't. And then, I don't like this. I don't want to do this. You know, she'd still sit there and watch everybody else and, you know, dabble with it. But she'd just keep repeating all these negative things. And only because she thought it wasn't good enough. And, you know, I keep reassuring her and helping her and showing her and stuff. And then another resident who was enjoying the project and doing fine up to that point in time started to pick up on the negativity and stare at her. And normally with work, I have a lot of patience. Mm-hmm. But after an hour of hearing it every few minutes, it's like I'm rolling my eye at it because it was not only affecting, you know, the other residents in the art, but everybody in the room and the staff, you know, because it was just over and over, you know, every few minutes. And she had expressed similar negativity in the music sessions. You know, she'd look at a title in her songbook and say, I don't know this song. Who knows these songs? I don't know any of these songs. You know, she'd go on and on. And she actually did know. You know, as soon as I would sing it, she'd end up singing them. But she would just keep on with the negativity. And then I had something called Singer's Choice where they pick a song they know and like to sing, and then I let them sing it on their own. I just accompany them, you know, and help out when needed. And she goes, I'm not going to sing by myself, you know, et cetera, on and on. And so then in a dance class on the following night, we were in a circle talking about, you know, things we were going through, and I brought up this incident and related things, realizations I had that I journaled about. And I saw where in past lives I would tell pupils and peers and stuff that they were not capable and talented. They sang out a tune, they didn't do whatever it was correctly, and they got to redo it or go over it and whatever. And, you know, it's, again, because I understand the continuity of life, have seen so many of my past lives, and, you know, it wasn't a theory. I mean, I could really see where I'd done that before. And actually, sometimes I've gone down that road a little bit with my peers, who I don't have as much patience with, so it's something I have to work on. But with my work classes, I seemingly have much more patience. Anyway, so in the following art class, I had them try something that everybody was able to do, and made it as easy as possible, and the woman only said, I can't, a couple times, and I realized there was a lot of love and action taking place from my teachers. And at the end, for the first time, she said, I enjoyed that. And then, update, year later, same woman told me numerous times, because she forgets, she already told me, because of memory care, that it was her last day, because her family wanted to take her back home due to the pandemic and not being able to visit her. And after I confirmed with the staff that it was really true, because sometimes they just say stuff and you don't know if it's true or not. But then once I found it was true, I wanted to convey my appreciation for her personal and emotional growth since I first met her. And I told her, how I appreciate she always smiled now, and she cheerfully said hello when I came in. She picked the solo when I asked her and sang out confidently instead of saying, I can't. She, you know, stopped complaining, and when the session was over, she thanked me numerous times, say how much she enjoyed it, asked when I was coming back, and the staff agreed with everything I said about all of the changes that she'd made since she first participated in the class. So that was a big one for me, you know, because it was just like, oh my God, I don't know if I can deal with this anymore. Yeah, the negativity was just so high. And, well, that's another thing with negativity, just like positivity. You know, once it gets rolling, as I said, you know, how the other patients started to come down and started to say, I don't like this, I can't. They were doing fine up to that point in time. It's like it's contagious. You know, like it's disease, it's contagious. And this is a subject we haven't talked about, but, you know, lower astral entities, obsessions, et cetera, you know, that's the frequency they ring in on. And it gets amplified. And it gets worse and worse. And so, you know, knowing the forces that are in play, that's another thing that helps me to turn the situation around, knowing what I'm dealing with, that it can be dealt with. It's not impossible.
No, it's not. Our society encourages outrage, it encourages anger, it encourages suspicion and a wide range of negative emotions, which put you right into the lower astral. And a lot of our entertainment, it focuses on lower astral as well.
Yes, it gets reinforced. It's like, you know, people vicariously do what they can't do in real life. Yeah, and I think that's where they get the thrill of it. But it reinforces that. You know, you almost get immune to how many people are actually killed during the show, you know, when you have crime shows and different things. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, they just killed three more people, you know? And that is all, just before, you know, that is all a different kind of food that's nourishing your body, that's being part of you, just like regular food. What you're taking in and through the media, whether it's, you know, newspapers, online, television, movies, whatever, however you entertain yourself.
Even the news.
Yeah.
I like to know what's going on in my world so I can better navigate through it. But I have to be very selective because a lot of the information, and I try to get a balanced view by looking at all sides of something. But so much of the information is like children pointing fingers at each other and calling each other names. So I really cut back on the amount of news I absorb because it wasn't uplifting. It wasn't even really illuminating.
Well, two responses to that. One, for viewers who, you know, are going through something with, you know, loved, whether it's the patient themselves, if they're a little higher functioning, or, you know, the person who's had to put a loved one in a facility. Because, again, as you say, the news can, the actual news, you know, can take you on a downward spiral. There's something called the Good News Network that you can get online free into your box. You don't have to pay for it. Comes every day, Monday through Friday. And it's all inspirational stories from around the world in all different departments. And so, you know, that's something when you start to feel depressed or angry or sad or emotional, that's a good place to, at least if nothing else than for a balance with the other news that's out there. And then, gosh, I had another thought as you were talking. And it just slipped out. Anyway, so let's see. No, it's gone.
It's just starting. It comes back. It's not.
Yeah, it comes back. I'll let you know. But I have plenty of good examples. So, you know, whatever you want to do, if you want to talk about something particular, questions, or you want other examples.
Until it comes back. Let's say someone's listening and they're intrigued by creative art therapy, even though you didn't come about it in the standard way. There is a standard way. So how can people pursue that as an occupation, as a vocation?
Well, I'm sure, you know, there's courses. I didn't have the time or the money to get my degree in a normal way, but I mean, you can do that. Again, I don't know. sometimes there's a regimentation as far as what I've seen and heard and read about of, you know, how you do music therapy or art therapy or whatever. And so I'm actually glad that I didn't have the time and the money to pursue the degree because, you know, my teachers are better than any teachers at the universities as far as that goes. So I just, and that's another thing too, you know, especially with COVID and stuff, if people've lost their job, they don't have any money, whatever. You can do just about anything you want. I mean, you can learn a lot online and stuff, but to me, the first thing is, well, probably step number one, be Socrates, know thyself. And then the second thing would be, you know, well, what do I do with once I know myself? Well, self-mastery. You know, as you overcome, well, and that's the thing. You know, I never thought I would be able to get into music or art therapy. And again, art therapy wasn't, I didn't even pursue it. The guy just asked me if I'd like to do it, and, you know, we hadn't even talked about it. Anyway, but when I put first things first, you know, I want to, you know, overcome, my karma, my problems, my emotional reactions to things, self-mastery. Then doors open that, you know, I didn't even know there was such a thing as, you know, what I did for the first 12 years. You know, I didn't know how I was going to get into the field. I didn't think I was qualified to get into the field. But it turns out, you know, that particular program, it was like I was qualified by my experience in the music field, and degree. I actually had a degree in music. And I was going to be a teacher. I was really just short of my teaching credential. And so that combined with, you know, being a sole caregiver for my mom, i.e. working with, you know, elderly and stuff. So it's like it was a combination of things that allowed me to do that. But I mean, I never would have known that. But as I put first things first and worked on myself, then the doors opened and the opportunities presented themselves. So if you really want to do something, you know, follow your passion and stuff, I would say that's the first step is learn who you are. Because that's another thing that it's allowed me to deal with, as I said, thousands of patients and probably, you know, hundreds of activity directors, and they all have their own style and expect different things. I mean, I had one who said, the only thing I want you to, and this was free for this facility when it was through the college, she said, the only thing I want you to do is, she's telling me how to do my job, is sing the chorus of these particular songs because that's all they know. So that's all I want you to do. Just these songs and just this portion of these songs. Have you ever done music therapy before? Do you know what you're talking about? Yeah. So, you know, so my challenges wasn't only with the patients. It was sometimes with the directors. It's like, you know, we need to work out some karma here, you and I, you know. And, oh, I think I remember what it was. The thing was, I was going to say before. I never pointed my finger, and you know this about Unarius, at the patient or the staff or the owners, and I said, you know, I'm having this problem. Well, say, for example, the one I just gave you. You know, I'm having a bad day because of this patient, you know, being so negative over and over and over again. No, it's like, what do I need to change about myself? There's a negative interaction between she and I from the past. And once I find out what it is, which in the past, you know, I told her that she couldn't do anything, that she was hopeless, that she wasn't an artist, forget about it. You know, she's not creative, she's not talented. So she remembered all these things, and she was just repeating them back to me. I can't. The same thing I told her. You can't. You know, so I was getting that boomerang back, that energy that I put out of criticizing other people and telling them, you know, putting myself up, ego, and, you know, putting other people down because it makes you feel like you're special. You know, that energy was coming back to me. Now I had to deal with it. You know, she was one of my one of the residents that I was working with, and I had to overcome it. I couldn't just move forward. It was bringing everybody down, so I had to work it out on my end. Could change her, but when I changed, when I had the realizations about what I did to her past life, then the whole situation changed for the better, for everyone, you know.
And
so it wasn't a particular technique even.
Go ahead.
So it wasn't even a particular technique. It's like, oh, well, you know, this is what I learned, you know, when I do music therapy, and, you know, I got my degree, you know, you handle X problem, you know, by saying such and such, you know, path answer, path action. No, I mean, every situation is different, like you said. Every person is different. So it's making that attunement to find out how can I best help this person, you know, and if it's not coming easy, if I'm having problems, I'm having emotions about it, reactions, then there's something I need to change about myself. I'm not going to be able to change this patient. You know, the situation isn't going to go away. It's just going to get worse. In fact, how much time do we have? I have one.
Oh, 9 minutes.
Time. This is really a dramatic case that's just what I'm talking about, okay, where it's me. It's not them. So it appears to be them. And it's a case of obsession, really. So I had a large that I did once a month in this particular healthcare facility, and for about 6 months, which means, you know, six times there was this Spanish-speaking patient whom I'd never met previously, and she would wander in and out of the room throughout the sessions, and whenever I made eye contact with her, she would glare at me and start speaking obscenities to me in Spanish. And I'm bilingual, so I understood everything she said. And she specifically called me a whore.
Ooh.
And I made a point not to look at her because, you know, that's when she would go off. But sometimes you do it anyway. And it finally escalated to a point where she was yelling and calling me a whore over and over and over. And the residents who'd been happily singing up till that point started yelling back at her. So then the staff came in to attempt to gently get her to leave the room. And meanwhile, I told the other residents, just ignore her. And, you know, to every insult she yelled, I presented no resistance, and I disagreed with her. And that took her back a little and some of the steam out, but it didn't stop her. And then I looked into her eyes, and they were, like, almost black. And I could see she was really obsessed. And but even then, I took full responsibility for whatever was going on between us, and I kept questing mentally, you know, what had I done to her in some past life to cause her reactions? Because I certainly hadn't done anything in the present life. So before the following sessions, I had some deeper realizations about past lives I'd lived. I've had many as like a priest or a padre or kind of like the recent Catholic Church sex scandals. And I realized that was something I'd done. In this life, I'd always reacted to, there's a supposedly holy religious practice of removing that quote-unquote first sin by having sex with virgins by priests. And, of course, this is conveniently seen as done in proxy for God. But as I mentioned, this woman kept calling me a puta, you know, and while she was using the feminine gender for the noun because, you know, I'm a woman in this life, in the past I was male, and I did it to her daughter. And so, you know, I'm writing in my journal about this, and the following session I happened to be studying in Unary's text, the voice of Hermes, you know that one,
yeah,
all morning before I went there. And so I was still in tune with the inner spiritual point of Hermes. And the woman came in. I might not get through this. So bear with me.
Okay.
But I wanted to clarify, it's not sadness or pain. It's just power coming in. So anyway, she came in, she sat on the couch in the back, and I was very aware of her and the Unarius brothers, and I focused on love and healing and seeing them working with her. And it sounded, this one song, she, it sounded like she was clapping along with what I was singing. But I didn't want to get my hopes up. So I just smiled and nodded in her direction. I didn't even look at her. But soon I could tell that she really was participating in her own way, not just making noise. And after the session was over, I saw her start to slowly come towards me. And, of course, I've worked in locked boards before, so I wasn't sure if she was going to try and hit me. But when she got closer, I saw she had tears in her eyes. And she came right up to me and she said, she said, I misunderstood you. I'm sorry. It was surreal. Really surreal.
That's powerful.
No, wait, I'm not finished. Now, the main reason she was finally able to say this is that due to my realizations, my morning study, my attainment with the brothers, I was no longer putting out that same energy from the past. And so as a clearer channel, and through my connection with her, the various positions on the inner could remove, at least temporarily, some or all of the NDP and thought form obsessions to where she was able to speak and think clearly for the first time. And I asked her if she wanted a hug, and she said yes. And we hugged for a long time. And then I had picked a jacaranda flower for the session, and she was surprised and happy I gave it to her. And if I weren't a Unarian and didn't understand principle and action and how the brothers were working with her, I would say it was a miracle. And then, update, about 2 months later, for the first time when I walked into the front door, she was there in the lobby. She gave me a big smile and said, I know you.
Wow.
And then I had a further realization. Well, I should probably just leave on having, you know, I just realized another thing. Why she called me a whore was because besides the thing with her daughter, I had had an affair with her husband in a past life, and so that's the reason she called me a whore. So, because otherwise, you know, if I just looked at this lifetime, I would say, you know, it makes no sense. I didn't know her. I didn't do anything to her. Why is she calling me that word? You know, why is she so angry every time I look at her? It doesn't make any sense, right? But when I look into the with the continuity of life, knowing that we've had lifetimes together in the past, and I have done something to her, it just didn't come out of nowhere. It wasn't negative energy and obsessions coming out of nowhere. It had a cause. And so, you know, once I realized what the cause was, then that's what, and with the help of, again, of my teachers, you know, and so that's, you know, this is why I am still in the business and loving it after 25 years and having beautiful experiences like these.
And that is a powerful place to leave today's conversation. How can people get in contact with you for your the therapy that you provide and also with Unarius for the way that they've shunned light on the spiritual paths that you're on?
Well, Unarius.org would be a good place to start. That's the main website, and it will give you directions to the YouTube channel, the Facebook page. They actually have a past life therapy, different website, and there'll be a link to that as well. And the experience that I just told you, I wrote up, and they included that in some of the other testimonials that are in on that website.
Wow.
I think it's like pastlifetherapy.com or something like that, but I don't remember that for sure. And then I normally work with facilities. As I said, with groups or one-on-one, I could do just work with some person, but you if someone let's see, what should I give out? A phone number?
Whatever you feel more comfortable giving out. Some people give you the phone number. Some people don't feel comfortable doing that. And we'll
okay.
Give you an email.
Okay. Probably the easiest would be an email. And so it's singer, like I sing, I'm a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And a dot. And then the Spanish word for singer, cantante, C-A-N-T-A-N-T-E, @coffee.net. And that's my work address, so anyone can write that. And with questions or comments or, you know, you have a job or whatever, you know, I'd love to hear.
And if you can send that to me in an email, I will include it with the promos.
Sure.
Lonnie, you amazed me, and today you amazed me even beyond the amazement I already had of you. And as an individual and as a Unarian, Unarians are very honest, I found, and they take responsibility for themselves throughout their incarnational journey. And in a world that we live in where a lot of people are abdicating responsibility, it's very refreshing and empowering to have people that will tell you the truth and shine light in the dark places. So thank you so very much. You've launched the series on the right foot and helped determine its course, and I'm very grateful.
Well, thank you, and it was great to hear about your experiences, too, and maybe you can talk more next time. If you encourage me, I will talk, so if you want to talk more, just say so.
No, my job with this particular adventure is to get you to talk. Thank you so very much for sharing. And I want to thank everybody who, whether you called in and you're patiently waiting in our queue. And I have a message for one of the people listening in. Nick Curto's show this Saturday will not be recorded at the regular time. So contact Nick and he'll let you know when we'll be recording. For those who will be joining us later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And again, Lonnie, thank you. I'm very grateful.
Thank you for the opportunity. I loved it, Hercules.
And we're going to close with Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream. Thanks, everybody.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true, and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know. Dream. Till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream, then love and trust are deep and fair. There is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Thank you. till it's real. Thank you.